Welcome, friends, to Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm John Sloop, along with Rita Dunaway and Dean Welty. And we want to begin today's program by thanking you, our faithful listeners, for tuning in and contributing to keep Crossroads coming your way. Please send your contributions to Crossroads, P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia 22803. And if you've missed a program, you can find us on Facebook or go to the Valley Family Forum website at valleyfamilyforum.org. Now, today, we're excited to be joined in the studio by a longtime friend, Harvey Yoder, a local Mennonite pastor, blogger, and counselor at the Family Life Resource Center. Harvey has lots of irons in the fire, but today we want to talk with Harvey about his concern for inmates and the need for prison reform, a subject he's written about in the newspaper. Now, Dean, you and Harvey go way, way, way back. So tell us about your relationship.
Actually, we do. We go back to the last century, John. No, Harvey and I have been friends a long time. I won't say how long, but we met as freshmen in college.
Yes.
And I just have great memories of being on campus with Harvey. And at that time, we didn't know anything about prisons, and we didn't want to learn anything about prisons. But Harvey's life has just taken such directions that neither of us could have imagined. Now, marriage, I can understand. You're an expert on marriage, and Harvey, I just appreciate your commitment to rebuilding the foundations of marriage and the family, not only in the work you do, but in the book you wrote about repairing marriages, like you'd fix a car, I think it was, and giving us an operator's manual. But I just so much appreciate the friendship that we have enjoyed together. Our lives have gone in different directions. Our passions have sometimes gone in different directions. But it's that concept of differing gifts, I think, that we can really appreciate the work that you do.
Yes, and I actually was involved in visiting at the local jail through the ministry.
Even as a student?
As a student.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
you were never an inmate?
Never an inmate.
Okay.
Well, Harvey, thank you for being on the program today. A couple of years ago, you invited me to attend a few meetings that you coordinated to discuss a very specific problem in our local jail. Tell us about that.
Well, I'd had a conversation with a mentally ill person who had actually come to RMH to be admitted to the behavioral health unit. And while she was there, in her mental state, she became incorrigible. Long story, she ended up in jail. And in her desperation, she became suicidal. And there were no mental health professionals there to respond to her, work with her in that state. She was strapped to a restraint chair twice for hours at a time to keep her from harming herself, etc., and also was placed in the isolated padded cell for hours at a time where you're stripped of your clothing and given a paper gown to wear. There's a grate on the floor to use for if you have to go to the bathroom. There's nothing else in that room. It's clearly traumatizing to anyone, and especially to someone with a mental health problem.
Sure.
Well, Harvey, you encourage us as an example of a citizen who sees a problem and a need, and then motivated by your faith, seeks to address that. How did you address this issue?
I contacted some friends of mine in the mental health profession, also some parents who had had inmates at the local jail who had had varying kinds of stresses associated with that, to talk about the situation. Some of us then met with the sheriff and the director of the Community Services Board. The latter, Lacey Whitmore, he and I visited the Arlington Jail to learn more about mental health services in their facility. And so that's how we got started, by just meeting with, appealing to some of the people locally who have a stake in this this concern.
Before we go any further, Harvey, you mentioned the Community Services Board, and I know that they play a big role in this. Can you just briefly describe what their role is and how they're involved in the local jail system for people who may not be familiar with them?
They have a contract with the local jail to provide a nurse practitioner who is responsible for dispensing any kind of medication, psychotropic medications for mentally ill patients and persons. And of course, no surprise, a third or more people in our jails and prisons have some kind of diagnosable mental illness. So they have a contract for 3 hours a week, plus some several other hours for some evaluations and so on. And since our conversations with them and with the sheriff, they've come up with some limited funds to provide a half-time mental health professional to be available every week, which is a big improvement. We think it's not enough for a facility that has up to 400 inmates that are in that kind of stressed situation and come from many kinds of mental health histories.
Mm-hmm. Well, Harvey, just going back to that specific incident that you described earlier, the lady who was confined in the way that you've described, did you have a specific proposal that you presented? And if so, what kind of response did you get?
We offered to come up with a list of volunteer professionals who would be on call 24/7 anytime there would be a mental health crisis of that kind, that someone could be called on, that person could just spend time in conversation with this person, be observing, of course, making sure that the person doesn't harm themselves, maybe be confined to an individual cell unit where someone could just be next to them across the bar and work with them.
This would have been at no cost, I assume.
At no cost to the jail, right.
And what kind of response did you get to that?
So far, we still haven't gotten clearance to do that. Officials cite safety concerns, liability concerns, and of course, anytime you have anyone in the jail for any reason like that, it involves some extra staff time. They're often understaffed, so it's difficult, and I understand that. But it's an ongoing problem we're still wanting to work at, and we do have this halftime person now, but not always necessarily available in a crisis in the middle of the night.
Well, having been involved just a little bit in this one small issue involving the jails and for a very limited time, I'll confess that it was frustrating for me to see what I thought was an excellent common sense proposal, this idea of using licensed professional volunteers in the community. And it seemed like the proposal sort of got brushed aside because of red tape. Harvey, do you think that the rejection of that proposal is a symptom of a larger problem with the relationship between state and local government and the degree to which our society seems to depend upon government programs to take care of community problems?
I think that might account for some of the problems, and that would be particularly true of a mammoth system like the Department of Corrections, which operates all the state prisons in the state of Virginia. I would see it as less of a problem, that is red tape, bureaucracy, so on, at the local level, because the sheriff has a lot of say as to how that local jail is operated, what kind of outside groups come in, under what circumstances, and so on. So I think locally here, we're blessed with a good sheriff. We need to work with that person and hopefully get them on board in a way that is in everyone's best interest.
Mm-hmm. I just want to chime in on that. I've had the opportunity to visit friends in jail here in the Harrisonburg area and as well at Middle River. And our local sheriff, I ran into one of these bureaucratic snafus, and I was really, really frustrated. I know the sheriff and was able to get results and really appreciated the cooperation that I found there.
Harvey, did I understand you correctly to say that approximately one-third of the inmates have mental health issues?
Nationwide, the estimate that I usually read is around 40%. I have no way of knowing. And, of course, everything comes in degrees. You know, we all have a little something.
100%. Yes.
But there is a disproportionate number of mentally ill people behind bars. Part of that is because when we deinstitutionalized Western State Hospital, a lot of these people, the bulk of these thousands of people, were put back into the communities, and the community services boards were supposed to help them on a day, day treatment programs, things like that. But our communities just weren't ready to handle all of this. And so we had increased homelessness, and sometimes these people end up in jail.
Mm. Well, Harvey, John, before we move to the next issue about overcrowding, I just wanted to pursue this mental health issue. And it seems to me there's a spiritual component that we may or may not have time to get into later. How can we prevent these problems from escalating into criminal behavior? But let's save that for sure, later, if we have time. The next issue I know that you've been working on is the issue of overcrowding in our local jails and prisons. I wonder, you've been involved in that, I think, more recently. Can you describe that and how you might be responding to it?
We've had an increase of over 500% in numbers of people incarcerated in our local jail just in the last 20 years since the new facility was built. And that actually reflects the same kinds of increases nationwide. Our state prison system is at way over capacity, 600% increase over the past two decades. And nationally, this is true as well. And crowded prisons create an enormous drain on our state and local budgets. They create serious morale problems within the facility with staff and with detainees. And my concern always is that with people just sitting there for hours and hours mindlessly watching television and having only each other for company primarily, that jails and prisons can become a school for crime. People learn more about how to be better criminals in so many, many cases. So it's an expensive way of making bad people worse in many cases.
Well, one of the things I really admire about you, Harvey, is that you don't just see problems in the community and complain about them, but you actually try to work toward solutions to those problems. And just like the issue with mental health services that we discussed, I know that you're actually working on ideas for alleviating overcrowding. So would you tell us about those, please?
Well, one of the key things is to make bond available for as many people as appropriate, regardless of their ability to pay for the bondsman or the whatever is required, so that they're not sitting in jail just waiting for their trials to come up. I am so concerned that people's relationship to their employment not be severed whenever possible. Keep them in the community where they can work, provide for their families, pay their taxes, make restitution for their wrongs, pay their child support, etc. So that's one thing. The bond system needs to be looked at. And once people are tried and sentenced, people who are not violent offenders can be given home incarceration using GPS monitoring devices, again, where they can continue to work and be gainfully employed, support their families, and the rest of us don't have to pay $26,000 a year simply to warehouse them and to keep them incarcerated.
Do we have this GPS technology in Harrisonburg and Rockingham County? Do we use that at all right now?
We have not used it extensively for some time. We also had, and earlier we had a program that was basically telephone-based. So the technology is available. It does cost some money, but often offenders themselves are required to pay for that extra cost. And meanwhile, everyone is better off.
Yes. if they're able to keep their job and perform their family duties.
The more people get cut off from their communities and their families, the more difficult it is to re-enter that community and become productive citizens, even to get a job, is a major problem.
Yeah.
Well, Harvey, we've all been reading in our local paper. I think you've addressed this in one of your Viewpoint articles. Harrisonburg, Rockingham County have entered into an agreement to address this overcrowding with Middle River Jail down near Verona to help resolve this overcrowding issue. What are your thoughts on that? Is it a good solution?
Actually, it's a far better solution, in my opinion, than the proposed 63-some million that had been proposed for a new facility. And in addition, that would have been a new set of operating costs as well, not just the initial capital investment. My concern is that it still assumes that we're going to be incarcerating people at the same rate, in fact, at an increased rate, so that we're building in this capacity for more space, and on the assumption that we will have ever more detainees. And I think we need to think outside the box and begin to think of how can this community be a model community for having the community itself take more responsibility and get to the point where we reduce the incarceration back more to the level that it was 20 years ago. That is the ratio. In the nation as a whole, we incarcerate over 700 people per 100,000 population. The next largest ratio in the world is China, and that is 128 people per 100,000 population. So there's something askew that I just think we need to take a fresh look at and see what we can do creatively and effectively to keep our community safe and to help people become good citizens.
Harvey, you use the phrase, we are incarcerating people, and of course there is a cause and effect. And one of my concerns, and I'm sure yours as a pastor, is what's happening in our culture that's leading to more and more crime. And so speak to, you know, from your perspective, what can be done almost in a preventive way in our culture to reduce the need to put people
sure.
in jail?
Absolutely.
And that ties in with the family. You know?
John, that's a great question. I wanted to add to it. As Ben Franklin said, prevention is better than the cure if we can prevent it. So I just had the same question, and I'm curious what we can be doing to help with that, to alleviate that.
And having said that, actually, violent crimes are actually trending downwards in our nation. There are increased numbers of drug-related, alcohol-related offenses, and also increased numbers of people who are in our local jail for technical violations. That is, they have done something during their probation which is in violation of the rules of probation. Right. So they're not necessarily always recommitting the crime, but they're just not paying attention, not showing up to see their PO, or they have a dirty urine test, whatever. But you're absolutely right. The general breakdown, not only of the nuclear family, yes, but the families of faith, who are taking, you know, who need to be taking responsibility for one another, mm-hmm, caring for one another, looking after each other, confronting each other when someone is starting, you know, some kid in the community or your neighbor, or and we're depending too much on the school system, and the school system and other systems are depending too much on the criminal justice system, yeah, and not taking responsibility neighbor to neighbor, person to person, to be the kind of light and salt and influence, yes, that we need to be to help
That's why I think it's so beautiful to see things like the after-school program that my church, Covenant Presbyterian, mm-hmm. offers for kids to have a place to go
Excellent.
After school where they're getting help with their homework, they're playing games, they're playing outside, having a healthy snack. You know, that is the kind of, I think, community-based interaction. They have a place outside the school system where they know people one-on-one. There's an accountability there. And I really think that's such a good thing. My kids and I actually are involved in that program. And I think more programs like that
Yes.
could go a long way to correcting this situation.
And the Boys and Girls Clubs would be
yeah,
yes,
exactly.
a good organization.
I wish congregations would take it upon themselves to each adopt some person re-entering, having been in prison maybe for years, mm-hmm. and needing the help, the coaching, the mentoring to just help them get reestablished again.
Harvey, I was looking at your blog this morning, and I just found some fascinating things. You mentioned the comparison, the United States with other countries. I think you mentioned China as the next highest. What I saw was Russia would have been the next highest at 470, which is still...
Oh, really? It's not on that particular infograph.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. U.S., I think you had mentioned, what was it, 700 per 100,000. Yes. And then Russia was next at 470, just a technical.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Well, and if I could just jump in on that, having just returned from China, it's interesting that China and Russia are both communist, godless countries,
uh-huh.
which impacts, I believe, the amount of crime because there's a lack of teaching values. But uh-huh. sorry to interrupt.
But the irony is that they incarcerate far fewer than we do. So how do we explain that gap? We're a godly heritage nation. We have churches on every street corner. Why? I'm assuming that means our crime rate is higher and therefore the incarceration rate.
Well, I don't know if our crime rate is higher. I don't believe it is, but we have enough.
Well, if it's not higher, then that means we're incarcerating people who've not committed crimes.
Originally, the way you corrected criminals was often by publicly shaming
yes.
them. You know, they would be in the court square in stocks.
I was
whatever.
Thinking of the Scarlet Letter, too.
Yes, or you had the whipping post.
Yes.
That sort of thing. And this was considered to be more humane. And also, the original founders of the idea were assuming that if people had a time to reflect quietly on their own in solitary spaces, they would repent of their sins. And that's why where the word penitentiary comes from. Yes. And unfortunately, it was an experiment that in many ways has failed. For one thing, solitary confinement particularly is notorious for just driving people crazy. And so it's not a therapeutic kind of environment. And so, there's a lot of work to be done.
Well, before we move on to the next question, Dean mentioned your blog earlier. And when I looked at your blog earlier this week, I noticed that infographic that we've been discussing, which I thought was really interesting. Can you just tell people quickly how they can get to your blog?
The easiest way is just to Google HarvSpot. Otherwise, the address is complicated to give you, but just Google HarvSpot and it will come up.
Spell that out.
H-A-R-V spot.
Okay.
Yes.
HarvSpot.
And I really appreciate that you tend to give fairly regular updates on the situation mm-hmm. in our community mm-hmm. regarding these issues.
Well, Harvey, just to feed on the HarvSpot again, I saw you had a suggestion that we transform Rockingham-Harrisonburg Regional Jail, I guess it's called, into a university. Wow, this sounds like I want to go commit a crime so I can go get a free university education. It talks about... Well, anyway,
maybe
you could explain
you out of that, Dan.
But the point is,
yes,
there are some of us, and I probably include myself, that says he committed the crime, he needs to do the time, and we don't need to make it the Hilton for him. How do you respond to that concern?
Well, I don't think educating people is in any way being soft in any way. It's addressing problems where they need to be addressed, to re-educate, to transform the thinking of people, to give them something different to focus on. And so my idea was, for a simple, modest beginning, is to have a library of DVDs available that inmates in a particular pod could choose, and they could spend between the hours of 9 and 3. These would be available, just like a school day, where you could view educational material and then keep a portfolio of notes and things that you're learning, a portfolio that you can take with you when you leave to demonstrate to an employer something that you haven't just been wasting your time, you've been trying to better yourself.
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies is The Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yes.
And the story of how that inmate created that library.
Yes.
And taught his fellow inmates and helped them get their, what is it, GEDs. That's
yes.
You know, do the time, but don't redeem the time and make,
yeah.
it,
exactly.
make it useful.
Yep.
Is there any specific reform that you're working on right now, Harvey?
Well, that's one of them. And another one has to do with trying to make sure that in every step of the process, we keep people connected with employment as much as possible, so that they can keep on doing the right thing and helping to support their families and to be productive, tax-paying citizens.
Just one more comment on that. I have a book here called More God, Less Crime. When you have somebody in prison, do we also have a program of whether Bible studies or...
Yes, the local jail has Bible studies, I think, twice a week. A little church service on Sunday evenings for a modest number of people, but space is a real problem. It's a maximum security jail, by the way, and space is a problem. Moving people from pod to classroom, especially since here they require doing that in handcuffs, it just takes a lot of work and it's cumbersome.
For years, my wife, Gwen, was part of a women's ministry through First Presbyterian Church on Court Square, taking Bible studies, worship. And some of the stories and some of the relationships that were built were just powerful. But I agree with you, Dean. If we're going to educate them, they need Jesus. And
absolutely.
They need moral values,
yes.
biblical values.
Yes.
Well, Harvey, I know that you are a man of faith. How has your faith influenced you to become engaged in this particular kind of work that you're doing? Mm.
Well, I see in the example of Jesus, someone who is all about offering wrongdoers hope and help and second chances. That's really what the gospel is all about. And that according to his description of our final exam, it's going to have something to do with whether we minister to the least of these, not only those who are homeless and poor and so on, but those who are in prison, those who are sick and so on. And so I just believe that God wants restitution, repentance, restoration for all of humanity, and that that is our mission just as it was the mission of Jesus.
Mm. Well, Harvey, I just want to thank you for your contribution and the work that you're doing. The Valley Family Forum goes off in different directions many times, working with legislators on public policy. What you're doing here in the local community is something we really want to support and respect, so thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, this has been very informative, Harvey, and perhaps we can have you back again to tell us about the success of the university and what you're doing. There's a lot in Scripture about the call to reach out to those who are in prisons. May God continue to bless your ministry in all of its many forms, Harvey. Until next week, this is John Sloop, along with Rita Dunaway and Dean Welty, encouraging you, as always, to be salt and light wherever the Lord leads you, making a difference for Christ at the crossroads where faith and culture meets.